And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Hi there, you people. I hope you're all awake. This is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here. We are broadcast on CRNTalk.com all over the entire planet. I'm here in the studio with our producer, Malcolm Berman, and our special guest who seems to like to come back all the time, and that is Robert Hooks. Also known as Bobby Dean Hooks. That's what I like to call him. That makes him sound a lot younger in age. What do you think, Robert?
Well, I tell you, that's a good one. That's my real name, Bobby Dean. And Roscoe Lee Brown, as a matter of fact, to convince me to change it to Robert. He says, you're just too young, too old right now. And there's always there's a Billy D. Williams, so you have to be Bobby. You can't be Bobby Dean. Mm. So I changed it to Robert. Yeah.
Too repetitious. Anyway, let's get some news out there today. The world's largest telescope is now online. An array of 66 antennas in the middle of the Atacama Desert in Chile.
I thought you were going to say the Atacama Desert.
That too. That's next door to it. So maybe now we'll finally be able to see E.T. You know what E.T. is, right?
No, what is it? I'm too young to remember that.
The extraterrestrial or extraterrestrial. Whatever. You know what I mean.
Dan, get it right.
I can't get it right. That's why I'm here on this second-rate station with
Excuse me? Yeah, but we're with you.
Hey, let's not forget about the Hubble telescope. It's still working, and it recently took a spectacular photograph of the birth of a star. We can't show it here, but you can Google it, and it is really amazing. How many of you out there like baseball umpires?
I do.
You do. Well, the question is, or one of the questions, are they a crock of you-know-what or what? Do they have too much power? Email us if you think that their function should be taken over by electronic surveillance and automated via a TV camera like they do in tennis matches. So email us with your opinions.
Well, I marvel at them because they can stand up for 3 hours without going to the bathroom.
Is that serious, Stan?
Well, you know what? I never thought about that.
Are we talking baseball?
Baseball, yeah. They throw out people if they look at them the wrong way. If they mutter an obscenity under their breath, you're out of the game. If you give any back talk, you're out.
What's wrong with that?
That's in baseball. I see it all the time.
Well, that's in basketball also. Yeah, it's a technical foul.
You can't argue and curse the umpires and the referees. Come on.
Well, I think they guys have too
America.
Much power. Well, maybe. Anyway, you ever notice the behavior of drivers in major cities, Las Vegas and Los Angeles in particular? It seems that the more expensive the vehicle, the less apt is the driver to conform to basic road courtesy.
By the way, don't leave out New York, please.
Well, you just added it.
Yeah. Oh.
I haven't been in New York for a long time, so I can't speak for New York. But you are right. I remember people in New York, the drivers don't even stop at the crosswalk. If you're crossing, they'll run you over and say, well, hey, too bad.
Well, the first time I took my wife to New York, and you know, she's from Los was raised out here, and she stopped at the red light, and she almost got trampled by the people.
Oh, yeah. It's scary.
Then I told her, what you have to do is you have to make eye contact with the driver. and if the driver takes his foot off the accelerator, you go.
Yeah, make eye contact. That always
it's
works.
Scary.
One other story, there was a Ruth Gordon, an old-time actress.
Oh, yeah, we know her.
And she told the story of the difference between L.A. and New York. And she said in L.A., she'd leave the hotel on Wilshire Boulevard and step to the curb, and she would hear the brakes screeching three blocks away.
Yeah.
In New York, she would leave her apartment in Central Park West, and she looked down the road three blocks away, and she said there was this cab that was revving his engine. Now, the trick was for her to cross the street before he ran her over.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That's New York. The difference of living. Yeah. Of course, in L.A., it's not this. It's more similar to New York now.
Yeah, you have to stop.
Well, you know what
LA.
The big thing is? People that don't stop at stop signs. And what they don't realize that a stop sign is nothing more than a red light on the honor system.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So there are a lot of dishonorable drivers out there.
Well, I have to admit, I do what's called the California stop.
Almost stop.
Yeah. You go to the stop sign, you have your foot on the brake, but you're still moving. You look both ways. No traffic is, and you... You don't come to a full stop, and I've gotten several tickets like that.
Well, I had to. Oh, well, I did once, but I didn't do it again after that.
Once is enough. Last item. Last night, I had the pleasure of attending the performance of Theodore Bekele, who we interviewed only last month. You remember him, Robert?
Yes, indeed. Dear old friend, too.
And his friends at the Saban Theater in Beverly Hills. And the show was over 3 hours long, and most of Theo's friends who participated with him flew in from different parts of the country. How about that? Not only for the show, but to celebrate his 90th birthday that was only just in May. Ed Asner, usually you know him as a curmudgeon type of person. He proved to be an excellent MC, and he was funny. At times. And there were some performers who, in my opinion, humble opinion, stood out. And they were Artie Butler, who will be a guest of ours in the next couple of weeks. Peter Yarrow, who is the sole survivor of Peter, Paul, and Mary. Right. Arlo Guthrie, of course. And Theo Bekele.
And he sung, right?
I could not believe the power of his voice when he sung. And he sang not only in Yiddish, but in Russian as well as English.
Wow.
The guy is multi-language, talented, whatever. He played the guitar, unbelievable, sang with such power.
So there's hope for me yet.
Well, I don't know about that.
For you, no.
We're talking about Theo.
Not
here.
For you. But anyway, it was amazing. And how many people there? His friends were legion from all over. I sat next to one guy who flew in from Philadelphia just to see the performance. How about that? That's loyalty.
Well, that's Theo Bekele. Those are the friends, and they are true friends.
Anyway, those are the news items for today. Nothing else important except on the national scene, but we're not going to go there, nor are we going to go into any of the usual political BS that's out there.
Please don't do that.
No.
It's not that kind of show.
No.
Anyway, Robert, how have you been since we saw you here last?
Well, first of all, I'm lonely because my other half is in Florida. Lori is on a cultural retreat, and she's actually finished with that, and she's now visiting her mother for a few
days. I hope she's listening to the show.
Remember, well, she probably is.
You mean she
my
was
darling, I miss you.
She was retreating from you?
She'd never retreat from me.
Oh, okay.
Our relationship is too strong for that. But what I wanted to do with Entertainment Matters, to pay tribute really to some women that I've worked with, two of whom passed just recently. But I'll start off with my dear friend Jane Fonda. And the AFI...
Well, she didn't pass away, did she?
No. I'll start off with Jane, but I'll talk about my two other friends. Jane's still with us. And AFI paid a lifetime tribute to her the other day. And I just wanted to kind of congratulate Janie. And also just briefly mention our movie experience together in the deep, deep South when we did Otto Preminger's Hurry Sundown with Michael Caine and Jane.
Great movie.
Yeah, and indeed with Faye Dunaway and Diane Carroll and John Philip Law.
Not a bad cast.
Not a bad cast at all, but we had Jane and Michael and the rest of us had experiences, racial discrimination experiences in this was back in 1966. And Janie was just absolutely taken aback when they refused to let us into Brennan's restaurant, which is a very famous restaurant in New Orleans. We were there on a press junket for the movie. And but we had a great, great shoot on Hurry Sundown, and we became very, very good friends, Jane and the rest and myself. So she's still with us, of course. And
excuse me, Robert, this was in New Orleans, you say?
Well, we shot the film in Baton Rouge, but we did a weekend press junket in New Orleans.
I thought New Orleans was integrated from way, 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 way back.
No, indeed, my friend. No, 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 no. Not in 1966. As a matter of fact, they stopped us at this very famous restaurant, stopped us, and six of us were coming in for dinner, and they stopped us in the vestibule, and they said, we just don't serve Negroes. And so I said from the back, well, we don't eat Negroes. So we don't. But no, it's no, I don't know where you heard that one.
You should have started speaking Spanish. You should have started speaking Spanish.
So I wanted to congratulate Janie for her Lifetime Achievement Award from the American Film Institute, because she certainly deserves it. She's got, you know, she has a lot of friends, but she also has enemies.
Right, she has a lot of baggage behind her,
right,
because
of the whole
political
Vietnam thing. But we love Janie in our house, and I wanted to congratulate her. And look, we lost Ruby Dee the other day. And Ruby Dee, one of the great actresses of all time. The first Broadway play I did was the play that prompted me to move to New York to become a professional actor, was A Raisin in the Sun. And Ruby and I were friends from that point until she just passed. And I just wanted to pay tribute to this great, great actress. And even before her, a few days before her, before she passed away, Maya Angelou, who was a great actress and writer and just an incredible human being, she passed away. So I've lost two women who were tremendous friends and also great influences in my professional life. And I worked with both of them several times, and it's a shame that they're gone. But look, they lived long lives. Ruby was 91. I think Maya was in her 80s. And so, you know, they lived wonderful lives. But when they're gone, you miss them. And I certainly will miss those.
Yeah, and both of them were still vibrant at that age. You know, I've saw interviews with them. It was, I mean, they had all their faculties. I know, you wake up in the morning and everything hurts,
right?
But they, you know, their mind was still sharp.
They were sharp. And,
Robert, do you know what they died from?
Well, you know, look, when you're 91 years old, you don't have to really have any serious disease. No, they were just they died basically peacefully and of natural causes. Neither one of them had any. Maya was suffering from illnesses. I don't know what those illnesses were, but I know that Ruby was just, you know, she had lived a long life, and they both may have had some illnesses that I can't speak to at this point, because, you know, I'm on the West Coast, and they were both on the East Coast. So,
well, you die of something.
You die of something, especially. But when you live that long, when you live to be 91 years old,
you could die of boredom.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 91 years is a good long life.
Well, didn't Ozzie Davis?
Ozzie passed away
a
few years before.
And that was Ruby Dee's husband, long-time husband.
The Lunt Fontaine of the Black
powerful
Theater,
couple. Right? Anyway, guys, we're coming up to a break.
Well, with that break, just let me add that my personal goal is 120.
Well, I'm
and
sure
you're approaching
make that. I'm sure you'll make
Who's coming up after the break?
After the break, we have on Ron Parker, firefighter extraordinaire, who is going to tell us what it was like on 9/11.
You're listening to The View from Over Here, heard on CRN Digital Talk Radio and carried on the World Wide Web at crntalk.com. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
Is
Take it away, Stan.
Okay, we're back. This is Stan Weisleder in the studio at crntalk.com on The View From Over Here. I'm with Malcolm Berman, our producer, and Robert Hooks, the well-known actor. And our guest right now is situated in Florida, but he's calling in, or we called him. His name is Ron Parker. He was one of the many firefighters that took place with the horrific events at 9/11. And any of you that don't know what 9/11 refers to, it was about the destruction of the World Trade Center towers back on September 11th, 2001.
And it's also the date of my anniversary. Wedding anniversary is 9/11.
Are you trying to say that was a disaster also?
Well, my anniversary was 9/11. My wife's birthday is December 7th. If I forget either birthday,
A
disaster.
I'd like to thank Ron for his service.
Ron, you're with us?
Yes, sir, Stan. How are you?
Well, we're fine. Everybody here is good. But let me ask you, I know your book is doing well and you're publishing it and you're getting it around, you're making appearances. But we wanted to call you specifically, not only to rehash some of the things that you did on that horrendous day, but what about this hullabaloo with the museum or trinket shop at the Museum of the New World Trade Center? We hear about it on TV here all the time, but you were there, you were a docent at that location, and you've been to New York a number of times since. What is your take on that situation?
Well, Stan, thank you. First of all, I was invited at the grand opening of the museum on its first day. And Stan, it is magnificent. I highly recommend that people come and get our country's history unadulterated there. The woman who designed it actually built the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. So it's pretty spectacular. Getting back to your question, Stan, as the New York Post, the rag that it is, and the Daily News, they commented the little shop of horrors. They couldn't be furthest from the truth, and I understand they must sell newspapers. Stan, it is a bookstore with a great many hero stories that can only be told by others because they are no longer with us. Again, it is not like an attraction at Disney World or Disneyland where you come off the ride or attraction and you're forced to go through a gift shop. That is not it. It is discreetly off to the side. You have to actually find it. It's not, it's not in your face. And again, it's a bookstore.
I'm happy to hear you say that. I'm happy to hear you say that because you hear just the opposite on certain media in this country, and I know it's not true. So I'm happy to hear you say that.
You must be talking about Fox.
Well, Fox News and the right-wing radio talk shows and things, you know, they're making it into something that I know it's not, and now we hear Ron say it's not. So thank you, sir.
Well Ron, what seems to be the controversy on that? I mean, from what you're speaking, there's really no objection.
No. Remember, in every single museum in the world, I've just come from Pearl Harbor on December 7th. They have a bookstore and a museum. You go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., they have a bookstore. Every single museum has to fund itself. This is not a government entity. It's a private enterprise that needs to create income to keep standing. It is also in the most expensive real estate in the world. So there's nothing wrong with it. I'll go a step further and say if they did not have this bookstore that does sell other things, T-shirts and memorabilia and coins and bookmarks and T-shirts that I mentioned, But you would go there and see these unkept, let's not call them gentlemen, in the street selling memorabilia and telling stories that are not true. And by their legal right, they're allowed to do it. It's disgusting. And
okay. Ron, we're coming up to a break. Stay with us. Don't go away.
You're listening to The View from Over Here, heard on CRN Digital Talk Radio and carried on the World Wide Web at crntalk.com. And you can hear us on www.viewfromoverhere.com. Know the View from Over Here. Stay tuned. I know, stay tuned or stay linked, but we'll be right back.
Stay with us.
Stay with us. Take it away, Stan.
Take it away. What do you want me to take? Anyway, this is Stan Weisleder.
Whatever's not nailed down.
Whatever's not. I like that. Yes, whatever's not nailed down. We are
I'm from Brooklyn, remember.
Yes. The View from Over Here in the studio with Malcolm Berman and Robert Hooks. And our special guest today is Ron Parker, one of the heroes of 9/11. Ron, you're still with us, right?
Absolutely, Stan. And what I'd like to say is, believe it or not, I don't know how this was done. My book, which was published exactly on September 11th, 2013,
wow,
is only available, and I have no control over the publishing date, is only available in the 9/11 Memorial Museum in New York. So yes, my book, which is only one of three books written by New York City firefighter that was at Ground Zero on 9/11/01. So it's only three books. There's a great many stories and books written by other people who posthumously are not with us. But my book is available there. And to say one more thing, I don't want to plug myself.
Hey, you earned it. Plug yourself.
Well, thank you. I am in the process, Stan, as you know, is to writing a screenplay, which you're probably helping me with. And I want to make a movie, and someone, one of my 3,000 Facebook fans who's listening to this broadcast right now, will be, one of them will be in this movie. I guarantee it when it is made.
All right.
Thank you for the.
But wait,
listening.
I have a question for you. During the break, we were talking among ourselves, and we would like to know, who is in charge of the money that goes to the bookstore at the New World Trade Center? Who monitors it? Is there a watchdog committee? Are people pocketing the money or what? What are the mechanics? Because I know you get a small percentage on your royalty, I think, when they sell your book. But who is watching the money that comes in that is supposed to run the museum?
Dan, that's a great question. Honestly, I don't know. I know it's a private entity, and so that's all I can tell you. But I'm sure it's run pretty well, Stan. I really am. I don't get into what people earn and the curators and whatnot, which is fine. Like I said, Stan, there are people standing right in front of that museum selling knockoff stuff and telling lies, and the police won't let those people leave. So please, anyone that goes there, do not buy anything from a street vendor in front of the World Trade Center, because you're doing a disservice to the people that died there. Go into the museum. It's magnificent. And I strongly support the museum bookstore. There's many wonderful books there.
Is the museum itself a private enterprise, or is it run by the city government? Or
no, he said private enterprise.
Private?
Absolutely private enterprise, yes.
Ron, are you going to be in New York in October?
Stan, I am. I just want to enlighten you to what I'm doing. I hope I'm looking for sponsors, and what I am going to do is donate one of my books signed to every single firehouse in the United States, because the love of this nation that I felt as few others, I pay back. And I love this country, and I love everyone in it, and regardless of what your beliefs are, where you're from, what it's about. You know, we're New Yorkers, and we're made up of, and we comprise of a great many people. So that's what I want to do. I'm looking for a sponsor, and I will sign and distribute to every single firehouse, because we have a lot of great many volunteer firehouses. These guys don't get paid, and I'd love them to have. We are all brothers, and it's a brotherhood.
Well, do you consider in your brotherhood the volunteer firemen?
Oh, absolutely. That's basically what I'm talking about. They're, you know, absolutely the volunteer firefighters.
Okay.
Of course.
Ron, have you written a screenplay on your book, or are you about to do that? Or tell us a little bit about why you were prompted to write a screenplay about the book.
Well, I want the truth to be told. And it's not so much, let's not say, because you guys are in Hollywood, let's not just say a feature motion picture. Basically, I would like a film on my book that would be distributed for educational purposes, distributed to libraries and bookstores and schools throughout the nation, just so someone knows the truth from my eyes. I can't tell the entire truth. I can tell you what I did, what I saw, who I was with, and it is part of American history, and that's more important to me. The most important accolade I can receive for my book comes from my brother firefighters. Firefighters that know who I am, or firefighters in New York City and other places that don't know who I am, that just read this book and say, I was there, and that's exactly the truth. And, you know, that's what I've been hearing. I've had a handful, maybe 30 to 50 different firefighters that were there that are my friends, and boy, that became my benchmark, where every single one of them said, Ron, you're right on. I'm glad you wrote this book, and it's your words. When you hear me, when you read me, that's my word.
Hey, Ron, I read your book. I was very impressed with it. There were some parts in it that I actually got choked up. But there are also some parts in there that reminded me of that TV series, Save Me, which was
Rescue Me.
Rescue Me, whatever. Same
Baby,
difference.
Rescue Me, what's the difference?
It was a good show, too. I mean, I'm not a firefighter, but...
There was one story you told about the fire truck. You want to tell that to our listeners?
Well, I'm not too proud to say that I did steal a New York City fire truck while I was off duty. And the funny part of the story is, how the story goes is we happened to have a function at the firehouse. And we were playing roller hockey on 53rd Street in Fort Hamilton Parkway, which is a very famous roller hockey rink. That put a few guys in the NHL, believe it or not. Well, we were at a soiree after the hockey game, and guys were, you know, we were in the cups, drinking a few beers, eating a nice meal, and a fire truck from Staten Island pulled up, and normally, you know, we knew that they didn't belong there because they had come from the division of training, and they figured they were going to stop on the way back to Staten Island in Brooklyn, pick up a sandwich, which is fine, and then go. To their firehouse meet. Well, these gentlemen decided that they thought they could park their fire truck in a bus stop and a handicap zone, and all six of them were going to go into the restaurant, order their meal, sit with their backs to the window in disrespect of the truck, and eat their meal there. Meanwhile, they're supposed to go back into service in Staten Island. Well, I got so infuriated that I said to one guy, I can't believe these guys are doing this. They usually leave somebody out on the rig monitoring the radio and safeguarding the equipment.
Right.
And I was so appalled. I was appalled. And I also had a few beers in me, but let's just say that's what gave me my courage, that I took this fire truck and drove it about five blocks away and hit it in a railroad cutout that no one would find. Believe me when I tell you, in Brooklyn. I ran back to the restaurant, and these nice firefighters were still sitting inside eating, not knowing their fire truck was gone. Well, I couldn't tell you, but I ran away and got in my car, and I couldn't tell you that I can't wait for each one of them with a radio to walk a block and say, no, Lou, it's not here, and wait for the donut-eating police department to help drive them around. I heard they found it about an hour later. With the help of the New York City donut eaters. So, and I highly respect police officers because my dad was one of my best friends with one, and they'll know that we just go back and forth on this. all the time. But I mean, the New York City Police Department is pretty
well,
okay.
Did you get into trouble for this hilarious act?
And now for the rest of the story. yeah, I walked into the firehouse a few hours later, and there was a lieutenant waiting for me. And he called me up to the office where I wasn't working, and he said, you take a New York City fire truck. Did you take Ladder 85? And I said, you know what, Lou? I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah, I did. And boy, did that crap storm started fast. And he was telling me that they called, and a lot of this stuff is missing, and all of this and all of that. And I said, listen, Mike. Lieutenant Mike, who is now the chief of personnel in the New York City Fire Department, big-time guy. He was my lieutenant. And I said, Mike, you see all the reading material and books on the wall that you study to be an officer? I said, I'm sure there's something in here that regards to being where you're supposed to be, safeguarding your equipment, and not leaving the fire truck unattended. So if you want to start that whole crap storm, I'm the ringleader. You got me. I admit it. But you know what? Let's go that route. So all of a sudden, the next thing you know, I got listed. I was in a firehouse for 12 years that I loved, and the next day, you know, I'm in another firehouse. But I met a lot of nice guys. And you know what? It's all part of the story, but it's the God's honest truth. And I tried to do it again, and they caught me.
Well, anyway, Ron, I will be in New York from about October 18th on for about a week or so. If you're up there, I want you to give me a personal tour of the New World Trade Center and the museum. If you're there.
Yeah, it would be my pleasure to take you and Marilyn through the museum, and I will make it my business to be there, because remember, I get to see my mom, who's 88 years old. So that's any excuse to go see mom is a good thing.
Well, guys, also, when you're there, as my producer cap is on, take a little tape recorder and let us know your views and what you see, and we'll replay it on the show.
I would definitely do that.
And no four-letter words, because we have a guy here in the control booth who doesn't like them and bleeps them out. Would you believe he has the nerve to bleep out all of our F-bombs?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you listen to the news where our mayor did an F-bomb.
Oh, yeah.
On purpose. Yeah. It's.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah, so did the rest of the media.
Ron, listen, you know, I wish you all the luck in the world with the book and with the film that's going to probably come right behind it. So good luck with your projects, my friend.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And again, above all, we're all great Americans. And I said, I'll never say it too many times, I have felt the love of this nation as few others. And I love and respect and honor all of you out there.
Well, just an adjunct to that, are you watching the USA in the World Cup? We won.
Yeah, but yes. Wait a minute, Ron. You're a Ranger fan, aren't you?
Dan, you're going to have to ask me that story. You know my story. It's in the book.
I know.
Want me to tell you that story? That's the most amazing story ever. You want me to tell you that story quickly?
Quickly.
If you could do it quick, go ahead. In two words or less. Go ahead.
You're speaking to a guy that snuck into Madison Square Garden when the Rangers won the Stanley Cup in 1994. I had my ice skates on and a pre-printed premonition jersey that said Stanley Cup Champs 93-94 already printed on the back of the jersey. I predicted the Rangers would win. I was going to jump on the ice when they brought the cup to Mark Messier, and I was going to wrestle the cup from him and then get locked up and watch the Keystone Cops without ice skates on fly around the ice trying to get me. And when I got out of jail, I would have been on the Letterman show the next
night.
And that's the God's honest truth. I snuck in there with selling tickets for $5,000.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, and you didn't have $5,000 to buy one? That's strange.
Why should I spend $5,000? I got in just like the next guy.
Hey, Ron, if I don't see you in New York, I'll see you in Florida. And we'll trade some stories.
All right. Listen, sharpen your pencil. We got to make a movie.
Oh, okay. You got a deal.
All right,
Ron, we got to sign off now. And you take care. Give regards to Judy. And we'll see you when we see you.
Thanks, Stan. Thank you very much, guys. I greatly appreciate it.
Okay, take care, Ron.
Thanks very much, Ron. You're listening to The View from Over Here, heard on CRN Digital Talk Radio and carried on the World Wide Web at crntalk.com. You can also pick up our back shows and archives and any other interesting tidbits that we have on www.viewfromoverhere.com. No the. And if you are a potential sponsor and you want to put some words in about your product, please give me a call. All the information is on our website. Or if you are a potential guest, please give us a call also. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi there. It's Stan Weisleder again at the final segment of our show. I'm here with Malcolm Berman and Robert Hooks. And we just got done with one of our well-known firefighting guests, Ron Parker, who was one of the people at 9/11, telling us what it was like, talking about the hullabaloo at the new museum, and his personal experiences.
Just a general comment on firefighters. I've never met a group of people that love their work more than firefighters.
The nicest people in the world. In the grocery store, I see them all the time in the grocery store, and they just want to stop and talk. And this is amazing.
And they know how to cook.
Right?
Yeah, and they love their work. Right? It's I've never met actually a firefighter who said, I hate this damn job.
Yeah, no, they do. And they wave at you from the trucks.
Yeah, if you hate that job, you're not going to last too long at it. You get dead.
Yeah. Well, you decide when the fire alarm goes off. But I can't see. You know, to me, they're nuts. It's this building that's on fire, and they're running into it. I'm running away.
Right, exactly. That's why you're not a fireman.
Correct.
And there's another thing, too, that people don't realize. A policeman, they may not see anything happening for maybe a week. Most cops never even take their gun out of their holster. Most of them, practically almost all of them, never take out their gun and fire it at somebody.
Which is a good thing.
Yes. Firefighters are in danger almost every day. Whenever there's that call, that alarm going off, you don't know what the hell is going to happen. Go into a flaming structure, you don't know if you're going to come out or be carried out.
True, well, American heroes.
Well, in today's world, being a policeman is not that easy anymore, because I remember back in the good old days, you know, even the gangs honored policemen. They wouldn't touch them. Now they become targets.
Well,
I mean, now they come into certain areas and people just start shooting at them.
Well, they're killing policemen around.
They have different gangs today.
Yeah,
well, some of them are not gangs. The people that are killing cops in certain places are not necessarily
gangs.
Look
what happened in Las Vegas the other week.
That wasn't a gang. That was a
two people went nuts. They had a suicide pack, and they decided beforehand, let's shoot whoever comes into our sights.
Well, they were a group or part of a group. Yeah, but they were part of a white supremacy group. White supremacy, but they were, I think they called the Sovereigns. They didn't believe in the authority
of the
U.S. government.
They were in the Sovereigns.
Don't believe in the government at all.
Yeah. I didn't know they were part of the Sovereigns.
Yeah, they were over at the Bundy Ranch.
They were kicked off of the Bundy Ranch. Yeah, that's how right-wing they were.
Yeah, the Sovereigns are totally nuts. Totally. I mean, completely.
And they got lots of weapons, folks. Yeah. Lots of weapons. And
Do you know how many weapons there are in this country? Over 200 million.
And they have most of them. Those organizations. No, they buy them up. They can't make guns fast enough.
No, they can't.
They're buying them up. They think they're going to have this second revolution, and they're going to fight the government, and they're going to go around killing cops.
However, there are some legitimate collectors. I know two such guys.
Yeah.
One guy has, this was about 20 years ago, he had about 200 in his collection. Very extensive collection.
Yeah, but you know, gun collectors, I mean, they're out there, but they're rare. The people that are buying up these big automatic long guns and all, they're not collectors. I mean, they're something else.
They're a little bit crazy.
Yeah,
maniacal.
The collectors are out there. I agree with you, Stan, but these guys that are buying up all these guns and, NRA, of course.
We had the music going, but a real quick story.
Quick story, 60 seconds.
All right, a friend of mine. Gun collector, legitimate gun collector, almost got into a road rage situation while going from home to the office. So he gets PO'd at the other driver, so he takes out from his glove compartment a gun and waves it at the guy to scare him off. So what does the guy do? He drops behind him, takes down his license plate number, calls in the incident to the cops, and by the time my friend gets to work, the LAPD is right there behind him, arresting him.
Yeah, but you can't
for
do that.
Brandishing a weapon.
Rightly so.
You can't do that.
Anyway, guys, it's the end of another week.
Thanks a lot, guys.
You're listening to The View from Over Here, heard on CRN Digital Talk Radio, and carried on the World Wide Web at crntalk.com. Plus, you can catch our old shows at www.viewfromoverhere.com. Okay, guys, have a good week. Watch the... Actually, it's Mexico versus Brazil today. And next Sunday, USA.
And who?
USA and Portugal.
Portugal, right.
The View from Over Here is a co-production of Infinity X and TBG International. For further information, contact Malcolm Berman at 818-687-2784. That's 818-687-2784.